Viking Celt, a son of red and green, sought the throne of Wales, none had ever been sung keen. He bashed some normal skulls, took a few batterings as well. For time the Prince of Wales, now a tale on a podcast to tell.
Well, fucking why, mate? It's fucking Chris Hart, Wales, Tales for Wales, mate. Fucking never fails. I can't even say it again. I gotta keep this in. Fucking hell, mate. Fucking hell. Chris Hart, fucking Tales for Wales, the fucking podcast that never fucking fails, mate. To be that fucking Geordie bastard. Hang on, let me keep all this in. I gotta keep.
Okay. Yeah.
Why, mate? Fucking hell. Fucking Geordie bastards. A lot of yes. Chris Hart, Wales, Tales for Wales, the fucking podcast that never fails. To be that fucking Geordie bastard that won't stop yapping, the fucking magpies won't stop yapping. Up the fucking tune. Come on, why I man, you bastard. So keep that favourite fucking goon.
Oh, wow. You know, for the listeners, when I asked Franks to do the intro for this, when let me just write this down quick now. And he just did a little offhand, oh, well, Tales for Wales, like in a Geordie accent. I didn't think for a second he'd go, right, that's my in, that's my pitch. That's what I'm going to hinge my whole intro on.
Newcastle, I know you're not a football fan, but Newcastle just won their first like silverware in like 70 years or 80 years.
Oh, I know, mate. I made some money out of that.
Why, aye, man, you bastard, a lot of years.
I'm a real toon boy now.
Oh, why, aye? I was trying to think, oh, you're fucking goon with my... No, you join me now with my favourite goon. It's me and Jack up the toon. Why, aye, lad? Whenever I can do guys. Accents, I can do accents when I'm not asked to do an accent. So I'll be like going around the house and be like, Northern Ireland, hey, you're here better than me here. Nay, listen here, Jack. That's going, listen here, Jack.
Any Northern Irish listening, viciously offended.
Well, when I do it on the pod, I can't do it. You just heard it. But like when I'm going around the house, I'm like,
I'm sure it's pitch perfect. Yeah. There's no one there to see you as well. You're just like king of the accents. So that
one. I like saying things you do, like call it scrupulous measures. what's a word that you'd say in Irish that's really severe?
Scrupulous measures.
Scrupulous measures. the irony. No. I don't know. Like, give me a sentence. I'm just thinking about it. I'm going to Google.
I don't know what you want of me. I don't know what you're asking. Give me a sentence. Give me an Irish sentence.
Give me like a sentence you say, like a really, like, you know, they're quite serious, aren't they, the Northern Irish? They're quite a serious breed due to factors. How do you know about the Geordies winning football?
Oh, well, football. Because I've been doing my betting, haven't I?
Oh,
my
shit, yeah, you're...
quick scheme.
You're on a get-rich-quick scheme.
The latest in a long line of fucking fix-my-life plans. I was listening to some of our old episodes from the promo clips. I've been playing around with that AI thing that we were messing about.
Yeah.
And one of them was about, do you remember like when we first started, I was on about that weird like mushroom powder I bought?
Yeah, to make you clever.
And it made me clever, like gave me the old limitless pill type thing. And it was,
I will fix my brain up.
It did a really good
brain.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to be the smartest.
I'm simple Jack.
Yeah, I just wanted to stop being full retard simple like the Jack. Entire time.
Yeah.
But so the I was just thinking about that, like why I'm so like, am I fucking easily led, perhaps? Yeah. Because
you're quite a bit of fads, aren't you?
I just like the idea that I don't have to put a lot of effort into something and I get all the rewards out of it.
Yeah.
But I remember that mushroom shit. When I was taking it, I was fucking
on
clear,
fire.
As you like. I was thinking clear for the first time.
What's it called? Like lion's mane or something?
It had lion's mane in it. It was called rainbow dust. Maybe that's what
that sounds
me.
Good.
I'm a fucking child at heart, yeah. I got some marketing stuff from them recently. It was like, we've got the new flavour, vanilla. And it was so hard for me not to go on in. I'll give that a try as well.
Why
like,
did you give it up
no.
if you were breaking through?
Well, that's the thing. I think what happens is, by the start of it, when I was first using it, I was like, this is fucking great. And by the end, it stopped. I think I realised what it was. It has a little bit of caffeine in it, right?
Oh.
And I never drink coffee,
ever. Yeah.
So I think because I've never drunk coffee, I have no resistance to it. So I was it was just like me having like a quite mild coffee.
Yeah.
And I was like, fuck,
God, I'm limitless.
It's fire in my blood. But it's
just hands on your palms outstretched. You'd look to this guy. I am unstoppable. Yeah. Oh, I've had a crash.
Amy, you talk to my wife. Amy, I've never lived. You need to try this shit. And then, I must have got like a bit of a resistance to it. And then like, I just was normal after it. Yeah. So I was like, oh, it only worked for like the first half of the bag.
Yeah.
So then, just go back to booze. But anyway, yeah, the reason I know about Newcastle winning is because I'm doing my little betting thing.
So what's your new get rich quick scheme?
It's matched betting, and I urge everyone to have a look at it because there's literally no downside.
You can guarantee that. Take us to the financial ombudsman.
Yeah, you don't make a lot of money quick or anything like that. I'm 300 quid up.
Wow.
And I've been doing it for a month and a half now, something like that. Which is, you just make like a few quid.
But that's good, man. That's better than you getting in fucking interest.
Exactly. So I'm just doing that, and it's
more than in interest.
And like the next like trip with you lads, trip, I'll just take it out of that or something, you know.
Yeah.
I know that Newcastle won because it's all about odds and shit like that. And if it goes a certain way, you sometimes earn a little bit more than if it went the predicted way. And yeah, so I got like a big payout. It was like, I don't know, 20 quid or something like that. But it was more than I was expecting.
And what did you start with?
Oh, like, that must be a big thing.
What's your starting?
So I put 200 in, but that's because you need to like back your bet. You don't like lose that. You've always got that.
So are you 500 quid up? As in you got 500 quid?
Yeah, 500 quid. Yeah. 500 quid just sitting in a kitty, basically.
Oh, well, send it to me and let me get rich. I don't want to work.
I'll tell you how to do it, mate. I'll send you the links and everything. And I promise to do a better explanation and be more patient with you than Crusader Kings 3.
Thank you. And if anyone who wants to hear Jack's Get Rich Quick Schemes, join our Patreon and he can send you the link on
there. Yeah, I was going to say, just give me 20 quid, right, and I'll teach you how to make 40.
You're the fucking, what's the Wolf of Wall Street guy, like Jason Belford or something like that? You're the Jack
Jordan Belfort.
Yeah. Belfort. Belfort. We've got a bit of a chaotic energy tonight because we've just had to redo the intro because I'm desperately trying to do a Northern Irish accent. Oh no, I started again. Cut this.
Done. Yeah, I was just saying, let me nip this in the bud before it gets too late.
We just had to restart the pod because I was trying to do a Northern Irish accent for too long and I failed. And I was saying to Jack that I can do accents to myself in the kitchen quite well. But the minute someone says do an accent, I fucking crumble and I can't do it. So, and then I start trying to do it. And I spiraled so hard.
Is that when you go do the thing of going, oh no, I can do it. Look, watch. And then you fail again and go, oh, I can't, I swear. And you're like, okay, mate. Yeah, got you.
And it was just, and I was Googling how to do a Northern Irish accent. And it was just coming up
for
saying,
for the listeners, he said, what's an Irish sentence that an Irish person might say?
Hey, nay,
and I was like, what are you on about? Like, I don't understand.
That's a bit of a Northern Irish, isn't it? Hey, nay, brown K. That's a bit Northern Irish. Like, is this really offensive?
They say nay, don't they?
Nay.
That's just copying an accent. It's fine.
Yeah. It's plain homage to an accent. That's all Apu was. It was just respectful homage.
It's an homage, yes.
It is homage.
I was going to say... Jesus. You think we'd have got the timings down of our podcast by now, you know, for 2 and a bit years in. Is it 2 and a bit years in? Or 2 years? How long are we in now?
Just 2, we started in January 2023.
Ah, so we haven't been out for 2 years. Do you think we'd like tandem then?
Yeah, we also had like one of our first bits of negative feedback as well. Like normally the feedback is genuinely lovely. But we did have one guy listen to one of the episodes go,
let me get him
for half an hour, nothing's happened. Or something like
that. I'll get it out now and I'll name and shame this bastard as well. Well, you know, the first time our first one Live 2000. I remember.
Let me just think for a second. I'll never forget it.
Let me just think. Well, something along the lines of this is hard to get through. I could name the exact fucking review too. But basically, we had a guy called on our recent episode. We did the Welsh Resistance in World War II, a very good episode by Franco Baby there, and Yeah, so we had a couple of comments. One nice one that was like, oh, I didn't know about this. Amazing. Yeah. Blah, blah, blah. Whatever, very nice. And then a guy named Jack Jolly said a not so jolly comment. And he said, 13 minutes before the topic's covered, waste of my time. Well,
13 minutes before the topic's covered.
13 minutes.
Waste of my time.
Waste of my time. I wanted to get to the topic nay.
Nay. Yeah, the topic nay. We and a unified island.
Not. We said we wouldn't do it again.
I know. I'm sorry.
Any Northern Irish or just lovers of accents, we apologise. But it's a waste of my time. Well, you know what, Jack Jolly? You know, we're not everyone's cup of tea. We're not your fucking. You know what? Get fucked. We're not your grandpappy's fucking
historian podcast.
Right? We like to take our time, and guess what? Yeah. We're the fucking masters of our own universe. All right, we run this shit. If we want to talk 13 minutes. 13 minutes. You're lucky, mate. You do like some of our episodes that go on for like half an hour before we even touch on anything that we want to cover. So you thank your lucky stars, Jack Jolly.
Do you know what? Maybe one of my more favorite fact is we've recently got downloads in Honolulu, and so we must be doing something right.
I want to go to Honolulu.
I want to go to Honolulu.
For those who don't know,
I just say tonight's episode's more for me and you than anyone else.
I know, absolutely.
I want to go.
What was that
to Honolulu.
Film called? Brian and
oh, it's so good. It's I think it's one of my favorite films.
Brian and Charles.
I want Bryce to go to Honolulu. It's a
British film. It's very good. Set in Wales, actually, isn't it?
Yeah, loads of set in Wales. It's set in North Wales, actually. Yeah, Brian and Charles. It's got the guy who's in, like, Derek and...
David Earl. That's it, He's the guy who plays Kev in Derek.
Yeah.
Very funny guy.
And he makes this like robot, and he wants to go to Honolulu, and it's really... like it makes me laugh so much. But I was looking at where people listen to us, and it is genuinely... all around the world, except we haven't really broken the Russian or Chinese market. We're not that big, you know. Well,
mate, the Russians don't want us. Putin can handle us, mate.
I would say the African continent, which is the biggest continent, is huge. They've snubbed us as well. We've been quite snubbed by the African
absolutely
continent.
Absolutely zero interest in Welsh history, those guys.
And if you know any Chileans, we haven't got any Chilean listeners. That'd be quite nice to get some of them. But I mean, like Europe and America, we're doing pretty well there. So that ain't too shabby. Yeah. So
we got some people in like Middle Eastern as well, haven't we? We got some Qataris. We got some.
Yeah, that's a good. I'd like to be called Qatari. That sounds like a good. You know, like sometimes some collective names for people sound good, don't they?
Sound cool.
Qatari sounds cool.
Yeah. I think it sounds a bit like katana.
Yeah,
sounds
maybe.
Like a weapon.
Some absolute weeber, what they call weeber.
While you were trying to get podcast listeners in Qatar, I was studying the blade. Yeah, I got you.
I am one with the blade. there was another country where I like the collective name for it, when they call them like... I can't remember, but I also once heard that what Hong Kongers are called, like honkers or something like that, which probably can't be
honkies?
True. No, that honkers. Can't be right. Hong Kongers. You're riffing. You're having
trying
a little
to be riffing. I'm trying to riff. What is a person from Hong Kong called?
I'm pretty sure it's a honker.
Oh, it's Hong Konger.
Hong Konger. Not as good as I thought originally.
Or a Hong Kongese, apparently.
Honky's
better.
Yeah, honkies. Yeah, and here for Hong Kong listeners, your honkies to us.
Please, any honkies are interested in Welsh history, give us a listen now. Come on, we got
a little
get
honk.
The numbers up. honk if you're horny, you honkies, and give us some listens.
This episode started off wild.
Jack Jolly would be absolutely fuming at this episode.
Well, luckily, so much is going to be cut because we're at like 17 minutes right now. So when you look at how much we've cut
the first fucking 5 minutes, they're gone. So gotta be.
Yeah. Do you want to do a Patreon shout?
Yes, I got it ready here. So
sorry,
we'll
man, we're a bit doolally tapped tonight, aren't we?
It's all right. I'm mad. This is what they come for, mate. Next up on our shout out is a boy named Sean Hughes. Sean, spell S-I-O-N, the beautiful
the
Welsh
right way.
The right way, the correct way, the name of this land, the way that the Brittonic people would have called it back in the day, I'm sure.
I do like Sean it when English Hughes, people pronounce it Sion, though. That's quite funny. Sion. My brother in Sion.
We've got a friend We got it. Very good. Absolute scientist. Yeah. The we got a friend Scion, haven't we?
We've
called that previously.
Yeah. A little mate Scion.
Yeah, he's absolutely loves Israel. He's
absolute Zionist. Oh dear.
Jeez. Too easy. Right. Yeah. So Sean Hughes, right, we gotta think of a good name for him. Hughesy, that's the easy
one. You know in Gavin and Stacey they say Owain Hughes and does he?
Oh yeah.
What do we say? Zionist Hughes and does he? the implication. Does he murder?
Yeah, is he a genocider? Yeah.
Genocidal Zionist. And does he? Imagine that was the tone they took for Gavin Stacey, like hyper-political.
Imagine in the latest Christmas special, they made this joke about it. They turned Owain Hughes from like the Series 2 or whatever. Went, yeah, massive Zionist.
Sean Hughes, Zionist Hughes.
Hour and 20 of no entertainment, just dogmatic political commentary all the way through, but with the same characters, Joanna Page going, yeah. Well, aww. I just think from
the land to the sea. Oh, yes, Simone.
Jesus, well.
Sorry, Sean.
Never let it be said that we can't blend
political satire.
Political comments, political satire, and a little bit of really fucking dumb Gavin Stacey comedy.
Yeah.
Who would Bryn be in that? Maybe this is one for a Patreon episode.
You know that he's quite mean.
Let's recast the quite real genocide going on at the moment with Welsh actors.
Bryn is quite mean in the Christmas episode. You know, the finale episode? He's a bit, like, spiteful. Yeah. So maybe he could be Benjamin Netanyahu.
He's nasty to Gwen, isn't he? Yeah. Bryn as Benjamin Netanyahu.
Imagine describing Benjamin Netanyahu as a bit mean.
Yeah, he's a bit nasty.
He's a bit soured the taste that man has.
He's touchy, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, well, dog. Sorry, Sean. That's... We haven't come up with something too good for you there, but it is what it is.
You know, let's try and claim it back. How do you spell his surname, Hughes?
Hughes, H-U-G-H-E-S. Okay. So a bit of an amalgamation of Stalin's there.
Huge Zionist? Is that anything?
Always back to Zion.
Yeah.
Sean Hughes Blues Clues. Is that any good?
Yeah, that's it. You've nailed it. He's going to be thrilled with that one.
Sean Hughes Blues Clues.
Probably rather be called a Zionist.
That's it.
I'll take the first one.
I can only apologise, Sean. I even know now that what I've just said is just utter rubbish, but I'm just rhyming.
Yeah.
I'm not even, rhyming. There's no thought gone into it.
Rhyming.
Is it fucking crime to rhyme in Israel, is it? Or something? Fucking
probably.
Hell, you're a Zionist.
All right. And if you sign up to Patreon, you can be called a Zionist as well.
It's two. Yeah. You're lucky.
How many beers have you had tonight? Because I've had quite a few already.
Yeah, I think this is number 4 or 5.
Five. We've already started.
I don't usually start calling people Zionists until my 4th or 5th year.
Yeah.
But there we go.
Yeah, just wait till you get to our 10th and we'll come back round. So from one political struggle to another, we go from Sean Hughes, ultra-Zionist, to another... struggling history. We have Griffith Ap Cynan today.
We do. Yeah. I love that political struggle as well. Another like soft touch description of what we're referring to.
Oh, they're just having a bit of a political struggle
for God's sake. Yeah, should maybe cut that out. I don't know. A bit much.
Leave this bit in, but cut the bit we just said. Yeah, well,
quite extreme,
I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a difficult time
because we
are very political. I care an awful lot about politics, but I don't really want to come to a podcast and hear two fucking white guys drone on about it. But fucking maybe just don't bomb civilians.
Save that for our spin-off pod, Tales for Politics, and then you can listen to us all day long.
Me ranting against fucking Zionists.
just us coming up with variations of Sean and Zionist, yeah.
Well, from the Middle East to the Middle Ages, today's episode is hosted or presented by Kaji, by Jack. Do you want to talk us through what it is?
Yeah, so I'm going to be talking about Griffith at Canaan.
So funny, we just taken
the Middle Ages, by the way. That was very good.
Well, we've just taken a little break to kind of to calm down. We've come back like we're NPR radio. Yeah. So, hello, you join us tonight, and we're going to be talking through.
Right. Yeah, get the received pronunciation down now. You're back on BBC News type thing rather than another fucking nutcase stuff we were talking about. Yeah. Honestly, in the edit, this is going to be such an emotional or tonal, rather, whiplash because we're going to be like, blah, 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 and then be like, right, you're talking about Griffith Ab Canaan now. And,
yeah. So his plight against the people was. Also, what are you drinking?
Anyway, right, we'll try and. Oh, yes, so we didn't cover that. I was drinking Carlsberg. I'm now on the Stellas, mate.
Nice. I'm on the Carlings. I've been to the pub, had them on the Carlings. Carlings.
Lovely stuff. You're down the Water Guard. I saw the texts, the images that made me fucking seethe with jealousy.
Yeah, it was gorge. Right, sorry, history.
I'm not gonna
Let's
lie.
Go.
It was gorge. Right, back to history. So, talking about Griffith Ab Cynan. Yet another Welsh ruler that's been forgotten to the annals of history. This one isn't an Owain or a Llywelyn. He is a Griffith, though, a Griffith Ab Cynan, to be exact. Born in 1055, old Griff was a king of Gwynedd in the late 11th and early 12th centuries and was a key figure in defending Wales against the Normans. But his rule is very unique in that it was very on and off, which I'll cover more about later. But another unique thing about Griffith is that, unlike most of his fellow Welsh rulers, we actually have a surviving biography of the king.
Ooh, that's cool.
Aptly named The History of Griffith Ab Cynan. That was written in the late 1100s, either by his son or his grandson. They're not too sure, they're torn on which ones. But yeah, we've got an actual biography, which is very rare for, well, basically anything in fucking medieval Wales, because we're shit at writing things down.
Yeah.
The original is thought to have been written in Latin and then various copies made in the same language and in Welsh. But in any case, we actually have some good background notes from around the time. So it's nice and refreshing for a change. So I had quite a good bit of like accurate information to go off of this. Mm. So first thing I cover is ancestry. According to this handy biography, Griff was born just outside of Dublin in a place near... what would become modern day Swords, if there's any listeners that are familiar with the Emerald Isle.
Would it help that's if just I did outside an of accent?
No, I think. Go on, say my name's Griffith and I was born in Swords.
They call me Griffith and I was born outside here, the Emerald Isle, and the old green grass are home.
Yeah, I should have just said no, shouldn't I? But then,
that's quite mean anyway. You catch.
So he was born in Ireland, just outside of Dublin or modern day Dublin. This area would have been under control of the Norse Gaels at the time. These were the people that resulted from the Viking settlers in Ireland mixing with the native Gaelic Celts. As to how young Griff ended up born in Ireland, Griffith's grandfather, a guy called Iago Ab Idwal Ab Meirig, was the ruler of Gwynedd from 1023 until 1039, when he was killed by his own men. Oof. Another Griffith, Griffith Ab Llywelyn, took Iago's place on the throne and exiled Iago's heir. Cynan Ab Iago, Griffith's father, fled to Ireland and eventually married Ragnhilda, or Ragnell in Welsh, granddaughter of King Sigtrygg Silkbeard, who was king of Dublin back in the 900s.
And is it fair to say, like, the Irish had quite a lot of Viking invasion, wasn't there? Especially Dublin.
Loads of it, yeah. So there was lots of, there was loads of it, mate. So yeah, they had lots of a Viking presence in Ireland around this time. So, am I making all sense, by the way? This
it's really clear,
mate. Good. So not long after Griffith was born, his father Cynan was killed before he could ever get a chance at retaking his father's throne. Because he barely made a blip on the Welsh history radar, Griffith Ab Cynan is often referred to in like sort of historical documents as the grandson of Iago rather than the son of Cynan.
Oh, that's harsh.
Because his son didn't really amount to much in the a non-player. But I mean, there's been so many non-players that still get named, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's very harsh. So anyway, Griff, Argriff we're talking about today. He was a potent mix of Welsh, Celt, and Gaelic Viking, which seems like setup of, like, I don't know, that seems like a historic fantasy novel or something like that, you know? But this happened for real. And his Irish connection...
This is real, actually. This is real. Stranger than fiction.
Okay, do a bit of research, maybe. This happened for reals, right? And this Irish connection would prove invaluable to Griffith later in life. Again, I'll touch on that later. Also worth mentioning as well, Griffith was a descendant of Rodri Mawr, a.k.a. Rodri the Great, king of Gwynedd from 844 to 878. He was a very big-time boy as well, fought off the Vikings in Wales and whatnot.
Dane Slayer.
Man of good stock. A Dane Slayer, exactly. So he's from... The guy's from, like, potent stock, both Welsh and Irish. Well, Viking, whatever you want to... Whatever your sort of preference is. So I'm going to start at Griffith's first bid at the throne.
Yeah.
Now we've covered his ancestry. His first bid for Gorsedd Gwynedd, or the Gwynedian throne in English, began when he was 20 years old in 1075, following the death of a guy named Bleddyn ap Cynddin. Bleddyn was a co-ruler of Gwynedd with his brother Rhiwallon, and these brothers had been given the throne by King Harold Godwinson, an Anglo-Saxon king, before the invasion of the Normans. After Bleddyn died, none of his heirs were old enough to take the throne, and so Bleddyn's cousin, Trehearn ap Caradog, seized control of Gwynedd, although his rule was considered a bit tenuous and not everyone was on board with it.
Can I quickly jump
in? This is where Griffith...
Sure. For Harold Godwinson, there's a new TV show coming out that the guy from Game of Thrones who plays the incestuous brother...
Oh my god, why can't I think of it? Jamie Lannister.
Jamie Lannister, yeah, he plays Harold Godwinson and it looks fucking sick. It looks a really good TV, similar to like Last Kingdom.
But that's Nikolai Coster-Waldau.
That's the boy, yeah.
That's the one.
Foster Wells.
Oh man, Foster Wells. How have I not even. I haven't seen an advert for that.
I'll send it to you. It looks so fucking good.
Please do.
Yeah. And that whole story, Harold Godwinson, is a fucking class story. This is my favourite period in history, and it is.
The boy was hard done by.
He got fucked. He's a man who ended Vikings.
Tried his best, but yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry to jump in there. I just wanted to say that because I wanted
to. That's right. No worries. Perfectly valid, mate. That's the sort of shit I like to hear about. So, this is where... I love that shit, bro. So this, like I said, this usurping almost by Trehearn ap Caradog wasn't looked upon well by the local Welsh population. So this is where Griffith saw an opportunity. Griffith landed at Abermenai Point in Anglesey with an Irish Norse army and was joined by a contingent of troops under the command of Robert of Frithlan, a Norman ruler. From what I could find, it seemed like the Normans weren't happy with Trehearn pinching Gwynedd, essentially. Mm-hmm. So they threw their lot in with Griffith to sort of sort the mess out, like an enemy of my enemy to my friend type setup. Together, Griffith and Robert conquered Llyn, killing Canurig ap Rhiwallon, a powerful ally of Trehearn, and defeated Trehearn himself at the Battle of Gwaed Eru in Meirionnydd, taking control of Gwynedd, with Griffith declaring himself the rightful king. Although not in an official capacity yet, he had declared himself king. He got his grandfather's lands back. Griffith split his army from Robert and marched eastward to reclaim Welsh lands taken by the Normans, leaving his Norse-Gael bodyguard in charge of the conquered lands in Llyn. Despite Robert of Rhiwallon's assistance, Griffith actually attacked and destroyed Rhiwallon's castle. I know Robert was a Norman, but that's still a bit of a dick move. Wait until the job's done if you're going to do like a bit of a crisscross like that. But literally, like, fucking sacked his castle on the way, just after fighting with him in a battle.
That is pretty fucking ballsy behavior.
It's ballsy for sure if you're like relying on that guy's support to sort of keep you in the game. So anyway, as if karma had reared its ugly head, the local Welsh back in Llyn, they rebelled against their appointed lord, that Norse Gael bodyguard I mentioned earlier, which caused unrest between the residents and the stationed soldiers. Trehearn took this as an opportunity, retaking Llyn and meeting Griffith once more at the Battle of Bron yr Eru, defeating him and forcing him to flee back to Ireland with whatever men he had left. So it was a bit of a yeah, he was like, I'm king, baby. I've made it back. And then instantly fucking was chucked back over the...
What is that called? The sea there?
The Irish Celtic Sea? Irish Sea.
Oh, Irish Sea? Celtic, yeah. Irish Sea? Yeah, yeah, so it's instantly forced.
I think it's a Hemingway where it says the snot green sea, the scrotum tightening sea. It's like unbelievably cold, that part of the Irish Sea is. So part of that between like West Wales to Northern Ireland it's a rough one.
Well, Griff, he had to take whatever men he had left after this defeat back over to Ireland, is sort of where he was more comfortable, I guess. Now,
do you even like my quote then?
It was good. I was thinking, did you just get it off the cuff?
Yeah, yeah. I studied at university, so it's just, you know, I'm a learned man.
Oh,
it's a James Joyce.
No big deal. I just knew that. Committed to memory, whatever.
Yeah, fine, whatever.
Fair play. It's Ulysses. It was impressive, mate. Sorry, I didn't give it the reverence.
Yeah, I'm dropping Ulysses on you, and you don't give a fuck. If I said Zionist, you'd be all over that shit.
Mate, start quoting Netanyahu, and I'll be fucking all over that, right?
Netanyahu,
innit?
Cunt, dog, rat, cunt.
Old Yaya, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, right, now, onto the second attempt at the throne. Griffith, he was sitting tight in Dublin until about 6 years later in 1081, that where he allied himself with Rhys ap Tewdwr, Prince of Deheubarth. Rhys was also a descendant of Rhodri Mawr, just a little side bit of trivia.
That name.
So, like, they had So we had like the kinsman sort of element there. Anyway, Griffith and Rhys, they became very pally, and at some point, Rhys was attacked by a bloke named Caradog ap Griffith. And had been forced to flee to St. David's on the southwest coast of Wales. Griffith, keen to help his ally, but also seeing another shot at the throne of Gwynedd, he mustered another Danish-Irish army and sailed from Waterford to St. David's. Griffith and Rhys, bolstered by extra men from Gwynedd, who still supported Griffith's claims, they marched north to face Trehearn and Caradog, who by this time had allied themselves along with another guy called Meilir ap Rhuathlon of Powys. Both armies fought a bloody battle at the Battle of Mynydd Carn. I couldn't find numbers for the battle, unfortunately, but a few, shall we say, less than official looking sources online said there'd be probably between 600 and 900 men on each side of the fight. So it was a fairly big scrap.
Yeah.
In any case, this was a real big deal for Wales at the time, because whoever won this scrap would decide who was in control of both Gwynedd and Deheubarth, two out of four of the big kingdoms in Wales.
And also, just to jump in, Gwynedd is like the seat of power for all of Wales, like Aberfraw and that area. They often say like Ynys Môn is like the kitchen of Wales. Like it feeds all of Wales. The minerals, the breadbasket, the minerals that grow on that place cause farming to be phenomenal. And like the Gwynedd is like probably the best, the most powerful. Then you have Deheubarth, and then you have Powys, which is stuck in between the English and
Powys is constantly fucking like stymied by the fact it's on the border, so it's constantly getting attacked. So it never really got a lot of traction, did it?
Yeah, and similarly, the south of Wales got fucking battered all the time
as well. That was like one of the first to go with with almost everything. Morgannwg, became Morgannwg was Romans took it, Normans took it, the Saxons.
But
took
they didn't. It was like the Western frontier. It was always fucking get constantly attacked. So Gwynedd is like this powerhouse and the place. If you were to be ruler of Wales, you would start there. So like Rhodri Mawr is from there. Llywelyn ap Gruffydd.
Most of the big time boys are from Gwynedd, aren't they? But you get a couple of absolute legends from Deheubarth. Well, I got a real soft spot for Deheubarth.
Like sick, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So where was it? Yeah, so this was a big time battle because it would decide two of the Gwynedd and Deheubarth, the two strongest kingdoms in Wales, basically. And this battle was going to decide who owns both. Commanding the invading army was Rhys, as he was the only legitimate king within their ranks because Griffith was an outlaw king at this point. You know, he declared himself, but it wasn't anything official. And when the enemy was spotted, he insisted his and Griffith's armies wait until morning to attack. Griffith was having none of it, and though he didn't have any official authority, he ordered all the men to attack right there and then in the middle of the night. Impatience was a virtue in this case, because Griffith and Rhys's army's shock tactics were super effective, leading to heavy casualties for Trehearn, Caradog and Meilir's men. It wasn't long before all three commanders had been put to the sword, and once their leaders had fallen, the rest of the army basically scattered.
Rhys ap Tewdwr, he got to continue as undisputed king of Deheubarth. Gruffydd took control of Gwynedd for the second time. And this time, he actually sat on the throne as king as well. It was officially like recognised. Typically, about 5 seconds after his arse hit the fucking throne, the Normans started having a go, encroaching on the lands of Gwynedd. They weren't happy with this like new ruler. A guy named Hugh de Vranches, the Earl of Chester, and Hugh Montgomery, 2nd Earl of Shrewsbury, they invited Gruffydd to peace talks at Rhyg, which is near Corwen. Thinking about stopping the violence in his new kingdom, and probably a bit sick of war by this point, because he's been scrapping for fucking years now, he accepted, rode out to meet the Norman rulers, and in typical snake fashion, the naughty Normans seized Gruffydd, killing his entourage and throwing the king in prison.
Ugh.
This was apparently the result of treachery by one of his own men, a little rat bastard named Meirion Gorch, apparently. Gruffydd was imprisoned in Chester Castle, while Earl Hugh and Griff's old war buddy, Robert of Rhythlan, who was there for his first little bit of conquest, they both took over Gwynedd jointly, and they built castles in Bangor, Caernarfon, and Aberlleiniog to quell the local populace. So just as he got Gwynedd, the Normans snatched it away from him yet again. So now, onto this third attempt at the Gwynedian throne. Gruffydd was in prison for about 13 years until he escaped on or around 1094. Historians can't quite agree. Some sources said it was probably before this, but he was definitely out of the big house by then. For context, Gruffydd is 39 at this point, so still quite a fairly young man. After his escape, he came back to Gwynedd and declared himself king once again, although technically he was only king of his men's hearts, as the Normans still had official control. Still always side with the Welsh, so let's just give him the title back for in this instance. He became active again as the Welsh revolt against the Normans was heating up and would lead assaults on Norman strongholds in Gwynedd. Specifically, he led an attack on Aberlleiniog Castle. The increased attacks from the Welsh prompted William II of England, aka William Rufus, to intervene and invade North Wales in 1095. Unfortunately for him, the Welsh reverted to their classic guerrilla tactics and avoided facing William's superior armies in the field, instead taking them apart bit by bit in a war of attrition that ended with William taking his army home, having not achieved very much. The English king gave it another go in 1097 as well, but it had exactly the same result. They were beaten back.
That William Rufus?
Mm.
He took over after William the Conqueror. So he's the son of William the Conqueror. Like, William the Conqueror, the guy who conquered England.
So like the second Norman king, is it?
Yeah, and he was really successful in extending powers in Scotland, but he was really poor extending it into Wales. So like you just said then, like, he didn't really achieve an awful lot. And it was like, to much to his chagrin, that he could like do Scotland, which is a really, really powerful state. Yeah. And he was in charge of England, but he really struggled with Welsh. So that's the thing he's quite famous for. He probably
thought that it would be just as, an easier doddle in Wales, because we're a smaller country as well. But yeah, apparently all for naught until 1097.
Apparently he was accused of being a homosexual as well. Which I do.
Well.
Because they describe him as flamboyant, but back in the Middle Ages, it probably just means he was clean.
Flamboyant. He just, like, washed his face. Like, yeah, queer as a nine bob note.
Yeah, he doesn't stink of shit. Oh, he must be gay.
Yeah, he has a wash every now and then. Ooh, absolute suit gay. You. Yeah. Jesus. Anyway, so the leader of the Welsh Rebellion in North Wales at this time was a guy named Cadogan ap Bleddyn of Powys. Remember that Bleddyn ap Cynfyn I mentioned earlier?
Yeah.
I don't know. Start. Please do tell me if I'm throwing too many names.
Bleddyn was at the very start of this, wasn't he?
Yeah, that's it, yeah. So the guy who shared... Bleddyn ap Cynfyn is the guy who shared the Gwynedian throne with his brother.
That's a bit mad. We never really looked into that before.
It seems like something we should cover. I think that's probably a lot of interesting duality, history there. Even though they were like Norman puppets, but like, there's probably a lot to explore there. But basically, this guy, Cadogan ap Bleddyn, the guy who's leading the Welsh Rebellion in North Wales, he was Bleddyn's son.
Okay.
So like, even though his father was like a puppet king, if you like, to the Normans, or one of two puppet kings, this guy was like fighting the good fight against the Normans. Yeah. Anyway, Cadogan thought Gruffydd would be a really good ally to the rebellion, and so he swore fealty to him as King of Gwynedd. But poor old Griff, he just can never
catch a break, can he? So in the summer of 1098, Earl Hugh of Chester and Earl Hugh of Shrewsbury, Normans being so fucking uninventive with their names as well, attempted to recover Gwynedd and sent armies westward to stamp out the Welsh. Griffith and his new ally Cadogan retreated to Anglesey, and they were forced to sail to Ireland in a small skiff when some Danish mercenaries that they'd hired to transport them there got a better offer elsewhere, and they didn't turn up on the fucking on the diary marker. So once again, they just went, oh, fuck, they haven't turned up. So Griffith just had to get into like a tiny little boat and fucking row to Ireland, essentially, to save his skin. So yeah, he's this poor boy, always a bridesmaid, never a bride. But fourth go, right, this is his fourth go now. The Normans...
Give up, mate.
I know, come on. I mean, he's got some fucking zeal, I guess, you know, he's got some persistence. But the Normans, after about a year, after he had to sail over to Ireland in a skiff, they eventually moved their armies out of Anglesey once the heat had died down, only for Griffith to hop straight on a boat and come back to take possession again. After coming to an agreement with Earl Hugh of Chester, that the Normans would leave him alone if he promised to be a good boy, basically. No more rebellions, no more nothing than that rubbish. Just, you know, fucking toe the line. Opportunity would present itself to Griffith once more, though, when a Norwegian fleet led by King Magnus Barefoot docked in the Menai Strait and started shredding Norman forces across North Wales, culminating the death of Earl Hugh of Chester and Earl Hugh of Shrewsbury in 1101. The latter supposedly was shot with an arrow by Magnus himself, old Magnus Barefoot. This left a power vacuum in North Wales, and so, with both earls dead, Griffith was able to consolidate his position once again in Gwynedd and once more declare himself king. He used a little diplomacy, negotiating the rule of Llyn Eifionydd, Ardudwy, and Allachwedd from King Henry of England directly. He gained enough power off the back of these diplomatic wins that King Henry actually tried to invade him unsuccessfully in 1114. He also used a lot of force, though, as well. He conquered Ceredigion, Meirionnydd, Rhos, Tryfeiniog, and Dyffryn Clwyd with armies led by his sons Owain and Cadwaladr between 1118 and 1124. During this expansion, King Henry once again tried to invade in 1121 to quell the Welsh, once again failed, leaving the king no choice but to come to terms with the growing kingdom in Wales. This latter stage of Griffith's reign was considered a golden age in Gwynedd and in Wales as a whole. He was described as, quote, head and king and defender and pacifier of all Wales after his death in 1137. He died in his bed, blind, at the age of 82, which is pretty good innings for an 11th to 12th fucking century hell. King, I'd say.
Yeah.
Not bad at all. Maybe all that scrapping from like 20 to 40 probably just really bolstered his immune system or something. But what's even more impressive, though, is his actual lineage after he died and his connections to other Welsh heroes that we get fucking stonk-ons for. His son, Owain, I mentioned earlier, was Owain Gwynedd, a.k.a. Owain Fawr, a.k.a. Owain the Great, one of the most successful princes of Wales. His daughter, Gwen Llian, was none other than Gwen Llian Ferch Griffith, warrior princess, battle cry of Welsh rebellion herself. She, in turn, married Griffith ap Rhys, a.k.a. Lord Rhys, who was son of Rhys ap Tewdwr, Griffith's old Deheubarthian ally and one of the biggest rulers of Deheubarth. Frank did a very good few episodes on Lord Rhys, if you want to go check them out, if you haven't done it already. Owain and Lord Rhys were the ones that crushed the Normans at Battle of Creaghmawr in 1136. So Griffith, that happened before he died, so we got to hear about that before he died in the end, which is quite good. We did episodes on, like I said, Owain Gwynedd, Gwen Llian, Lord Rhys, and the Battle of Creaghmawr, actually. So, yeah, go check them out if you haven't already. But yeah, that's it. That's Griffith that Cunnan, the quadruple king of Gwynedd.
Is he... oh, no, that's a different person. Because you know that there was once one king of all of Wales, Griffith ap Llywelyn. He had a Cunnan son, but this is Griffith ap Cunnan, isn't it? But yeah, it is weird, like the dynastic like connection between all the leaders, like because I'm playing that game still, Kingdom Come Deliverance.
Kingdom Come, yeah.
And so much emphasis is on like being people will follow you because they generally believe you are chosen by God. So like these rulers are like they will follow you it also helps that you're fighting, you're a warrior leader and you're charging into battles, yeah, and all that stuff. But they often, they do, because you have to believe in something. I think that's what society makes you realize. And if you think, no, this is the rightful ruler, that like charges so much. And when you have a lineage, 100%. It's like, well, your father was the ruler, his father was the ruler, and this is, yeah, divine.
If you're this guy who's like, you know, there's a guy who's king, the Gruffydd ap Cynan, during what's considered a golden age in Gwynedd or in Wales.
Yeah.
And then he has sons. There's a lot of, I can imagine, emphasis. A lot of sort of peasants, yeah, or whatever, stock, going, oh yeah, I believe in him. He must be good for us because he's the son of the guy who made Wales great for us.
In that game I'm playing, even if a king is like a bit of a drunk and not very good, because they do believe in God and they do believe in divine, that's what like lots of rulers are, they're divinely chosen. You believe that full heartedly. You go, yeah, maybe he's not a good king, but that's what God wants us to go through right now. So it's like the Christians are so like, they believe that's the head of state. The head of state has been chosen by God. You know, like that's what we still believe now, apparently. Like the King Charles has been ordained by God, which is insane.
Don't
when you break
me
it down.
Started.
I know, it's madness, but. Yeah, I've been reading a lot of like medieval Welsh history books at the moment. It just, and like you said, they're all related, but it's not by coincidence. It's like it is by people believing that there is someone chosen to be a ruler. I don't know what my point is there. But.
No. I get what you mean. It's like it's interesting that, but like. You're saying these people would just naturally believe, oh, they must be chosen by God, whatever, or you know, some sort of divine right because they're the son of someone who was a king before. But then, in some instances, like this, for example, there is kind of a bit of proof in the pudding, and that like his, you know, his son was one of the greatest kings of Wales.
Yeah,
his daughter is one of the greatest like warrior heroines we've ever like had in the country. She married one of the greatest rulers in Deheubarth,
and you gotta follow
Wales.
Someone.
You so can't not follow someone, so why not throw your lot in with the fucking the cool guys as well?
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah, I thought he was interesting because he was. I love that it's like he didn't. You know, after the third try, where I had to go away in a fucking skiff.
Yeah,
I probably would have gone. You know what? Maybe it's not for me. Yeah. Maybe it's not for me.
Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me.
Exactly.
Fool me three times, shame on you. Fool me four
bless
times.
Him.
Yeah.
Griffith, baby, he was determined to be a bride and he got it in the end, so well done on him.
Sorry this episode was insane, but Jack pulled it back by a really good bit of history at the end. Diolch yn grando, thanks for listening.
Oh, cheers, darling.
Drop us out some reviews, all that malarkey. Tell us if you liked
Diolch
it. We love
Kaub,
you.
Yes, the usual requests.
I go for a piss.
Same. Ta-da.
He bashed some normal skulls, took a few batterings as well. Four-time the Prince of Wales, now a tale on a podcast to tell.